I'm not sure if you are a classic car fan or not, but everybody loves looking at classic cars, don't they? Surely, even if you don't have one or even if you don't want one. But values of classic cars are heading north big time. Dealers and investors say that classic cars now fall into the category of pretty well a safe bet. You could even compare it to things like gold and diamonds. And we're going to explore what your car might be worth. Now is the time to get the text message through, because this is a popular segment. 0438 922 936. What kind of car? What year is it? What colour is it? As many details as possible, because that will help my next guest will then be able to give you a better idea of what it's worth. Mark Habitel is the Managing Director of Supercar Secrets, a specialist agency dealing with private collectors, and he is going to be joining me every Monday night at 8 o'clock on evenings. So if you love cars and you want to tune in, or you've got something, might want to save it to next week, maybe you're not ready to tell us now. Welcome to Evenings, Mark.
Hi, how are you, Coley?
Yeah, good to have you on the program. We've already got the text messages coming in. I've told everybody, be fast. So what is actually pushing classic car prices up, and how do we even start to understand the market for someone who's a novice?
Yeah, look, I think the first thing to understand is that collectible cars can be cars that are in some cases only 10 years old. So it's become more of a category now and less of an age-dependent thing. And so what that means is that in the past, really a car had to go beyond 25 years of age before it became a true classic. That was one of the sort of 55 or 60 things that made it a classic. But these days, it's all changed. So a collectible car, or a classic, if you like, is a car that these days is just scarce or rare, and it can be a much newer car. So, like I say, cars up to 2005 or 2006 can actually fall into that category. So that's the first thing to note about why values have changed and how things have risen. And then probably the second most important thing is that really everyone knows that these cars are worth huge amounts of money now, but not everybody's watched them grow. So if you'd been watching them for the last 10 or 15 years as we have, you'll see that the growth is actually only incremental. It's not huge. It just jumps up a little bit all the time. And you can expect growth with the cars that we deal with of about 30% per annum, which probably far exceeds anything else. But the Japanese cars, they're rising by even more than that at the moment, and that's because there's a flurry of interest in those cars. So why I'm saying these things is because, as you can probably detect, there's a number of factors that cause all these cars to rise in value and cause the sort of almost boom that we've got going on now. And watching the prices and being part of it is a really important part of it. And if you start watching them and watch the prices on car sales, I think you'd be quite amazed. I really do.
And now all markets obviously are quite difficult to predict, whether it's cryptocurrency or anything else. I mean, everybody loves to look at the housing market. But is this the same for the classic car market? Is it difficult to predict?
No. When we first started, it was pretty difficult. But it's like anything, and really we liken what we do to the stock market. Like with the stockbroker in the stock market, you'd pick all the right shares and stocks, and you pick all the companies that are rising. That's what we do with the cars. We know which ones are going to go, and we know when they're going to go, and we know what the period of time is between now and when they'll actually start rising. And a lot of that, to be fair, is what you almost might call insider trading, because we talk to all the collectors and they tell us what they're looking at next. So a lot of it has to do with that, but there's a lot of intuition with it too.
You'd have to understand the trends. You'd have to be talking to the right people.
Yeah, all the time. You've got to be, we basically spend all day, every day talking to collectors and talking to people that have got collectible cars. So, you know, we see the values rising all the time and we see the interest levels. And so what we do is we just handpick the ones that have got the greatest growth in them and kind of leave the rest. So the good news is that with collectible cars, all the cars rise, but some rise by more than the others. And we've just become more alerted to those ones that rise the most, you know.
So the good news is that means that even though somebody might have a car that hasn't appreciated as much as you'd need it to for a commercial enterprise, there's still money to be made.
Oh, look, absolutely, absolutely. And a good example just that came up this week was in the Nissan Skyline sector, which is a fast-rising sector. There's a model called the R32, and then there's the R33, and there's the R34. The R34 has gone completely nuts. Like they're the cars that were built around about the year 2000, and they've just gone up to 600 and above for a V-spec NR.
Hang on. So when you say 600 and above, 600 what?
$1,000.
Oh my goodness! I thought you couldn't have really meant that. That's incredible.
Yeah, for a 2000 Nissan. So, and the interesting thing with that was that, you know, we bought a couple of those and we paid about 68 for one and 72 for the other 2.5 years ago. And so they've gone to the other side of 600. They were very, very rare. There was only 78 produced of the NRs. So they are a bit of a special thing. But then the R32 was the sort of first one of the real collectible ones. And that one... it was a bit late to bloom, if that makes sense. Like, for a long time, I could see that it was going to go, and I talked to Shirley in the UK about it, and we agreed that they're going to go, but they took a while to take off. And then, you know, so they were probably a couple of months behind what we thought in terms of when they actually took off. But then the interesting thing is that the one in the middle, the R33, was the forgotten one, and they really genuinely were worth nothing last year. An R33, $5,000-$6,000 for a two-wheel drive.
And yet the 34 is worth $600,000.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But we need to compare apples with apples. I'm talking about a two-wheel drive R33, and the R34 was a four-wheel drive V-spec, which is a pretty special one. But the R33 is left behind, and now the R33 GTRs, they are now up to $60,000-$65,000, and they were literally 10 grand last year. That's literally where they were at. You almost couldn't give them away because no one wanted a 33. Everyone wanted the 32 or the 34. So it just gives you an example of sort of how this market works. And that even when you've got one that gets left behind like that, eventually it does get swept up, but it won't go anywhere near like what the R34s go like.
You know? I mean, they are pretty crazy prices jumping from one year to another. Is it COVID related? Is everybody sort of bored because they've been stuck at home and then there's a fixation on cars? Like what's caused, or is it the lack of demand, or what is it that's caused this?
Well, with the R34 V-spec NR, it is because there's only 78 of them. That's got a lot to do with it. But through the COVID pandemic, there's no doubt it fueled a desire for all these collectible cars, and things really took off in a bigger way in 20 and 21. And it took off across a wider number of cars. Like it took off across cars that we didn't really even ever think would even take off. And a good example would be of that, that there was a Honda Accord, which is a pretty mundane, normal, ordinary car.
And yeah, I know the Honda Accord, so I know someone who's got a Honda Accord. Is it a good thing to have?
Well, apparently so. I mean, this was a 1977 Honda Accord, and at the Shannon's auction in the middle of 2020, that sold for $38,000, I think. For a Honda Accord, which basically you probably would have picked up for $500 or $1,000, you know, a year before that, I would
think.
Yeah,
so $1,000 one year and $30,000 the next.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, to be fair, we couldn't really see the value in it. We didn't understand. But if you're out there and you want a Honda Accord and it's something that maybe your parents had and you want to get one again, it's not as though you can find them on every street corner, because you can't. They're very hard to find. And this one was a particularly nice one. So that said, there's an understanding about it, but it's still a lot of money for an Accord, you know.
We better get to some of our text messages, because people won't like it if I don't read their messages out. Tammy says she's got an FB Holden. Now, Tammy has not given any information about the colour or the year, but can you give us a vague idea based on that limited information?
It's very difficult with Commodores because there's so many different variations.
Well, how about we just get Tammy to text again? with more details.
We need to know if it's a V6, what transmission it's got, all sorts of things.
What else do you need to know? The year?
And the year, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll go then to Dave in Mount Rumney. He says, as a young bloke, I had a black Datsun 180B, the old Datsuns, with a Falcon GT bonnet cut down. He said, I miss that car so much. Recently, he says, I picked up an immaculate 180B sedan as some form of midlife crisis. He says, yes, they are a classic. So how much would Dave's 180B be worth?
Well, look, I've got a really close attachment to 180Bs. I bought one quite a few years ago now, it has to be said, but I bought one for $500 a few years ago and turned it into a rally car. Had a great deal of fun in that car, and I love 180Bs, absolutely love them. And, you know, before we had the rise that we've got going on now, you'd probably still have had to pay $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 for it. But now, 25 to 30 grand for a 180B if it's a nice one. That's what they're worth. I mean, they're a great car too because they drive really well. They're a really solid car. This is a great car.
Well, Dave's going to be happy about that in Mount Rumney. Hopefully he paid considerably less.
Now this he would have done.
Yeah, in Tassie, yeah, he might have got a great deal. This texter has just joined the conversation and says, how much is an Austin Healey worth? And are they hard to find in Tassie? Once again, I know there is a lot of Austin Healeys.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of Austin Healeys around. And Austin Healeys did go right up to the other side of $100,000 for the BN4s. But they have dropped back a little bit now. And if you're looking to buy one, it's probably a bit of a buyer's market for Healeys at the moment because they're a 60s car or late 50s, early 60s car. And there's not so many people around now that want cars from the 60s. It's kind of moved on a couple of decades.
Why is that? I love the old Austin Healeys. You know, the little sporty ones that are a bit like an MG, but obviously not an MG. But those, you know, are they a bit bubbly and cute? Are they the ones? Am I thinking about the right ones?
Yeah, well, there's two Healeys. There's the big Healey, which is a six-cylinder one, and it's quite a big car. And then there's the Healey Sprite, which is the little
one,
which is
yes.
The frog eye.
So what would that be worth?
Yeah, not so much. They were built in quite large numbers. So they're kind of up to about 20K, sort of 15 to 20K for a frog eye.
For a good condition one?
Yeah. You get a good one for 20K. You get a really nice one for 20K, actually, for a frog eye, because there were so many built. So they weren't that scarce, you know?
Now, Tammy's come back. She heard she didn't provide enough information. If anyone does want to text in, do it right now. There's still time to get your text message through if you want to know what your car hiding in the garage or in somebody you know's garage is worth. 0438 922 936. Tammy says it's an FB, not a Commodore. She said it's an FB Holden, and she said it's 1960.
Oh, it's an FB.
Yeah,
F for Freddy.
F for Fred. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
FB. And she said FB Holden, 1960, grey. And she said motor. Now, I don't know if it's got a grey motor or if that's a different part.
No, it's the grey motor. Yeah, it's the grey motor. Oh, so it's an FB Holden. They're very rare now these days for an FB. And they're sort of, well, probably, depending on the condition, up to 40Ks worth, maybe even a touch more.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good news for Tammy.
Yeah,
and what else could people be finding, you know, what do you think, personally, from your experience, and I know you've spent a lot of time in Tassie and you know it quite well, but what do you think are some of the more valuable cars that could be in old farm sheds? Perhaps, I even heard about a car that was concreted somewhere in like a perfect condition. I forget what the car was. That's not very helpful. But, you know, that there's some incredible stories of people who've taken care of cars and they're stored in Tassie as well as others in farm sheds. So what might be lurking?
Oh, look, there really is a very wide range of cars lurking in Tasmania. And I think we spoke before about the Range Rovers. The two-door Range Rovers.
Yeah, if anyone didn't hear that, because they may not have heard that interview. So tell us about those Range Rovers.
Well, look, the early Range Rovers, and we're talking 1970 to 76, that the very early ones are called the suffix A. There's A and then there's B. And those two, if you've got one with a chassis number that ends in the letter A or ends in the letter B, they are worth serious amounts of money. We've currently got 56 that we're restoring, and a two-door Range Rover that's a Suffolk A is worth currently today in the UK about $380,000. It's just amazing what they're worth.
Yeah, I marvelled at that figure when we chatted about it, and I think people would just be shocked to think that something that you said you once found a couple of them in a paddock and they were, you know, in very bad condition, but they went on to be sold for those kind of prices.
Well, that's right. Following a full restoration, I mean, you know, we had to basically start all over again. You just basically pull the entire vehicle apart, pull the body off the chassis, everything out of it, and start all over again. And they're not an easy thing to restore, I have to say. They really aren't. They take a long, long time. And that's why they're worth so much, because not too many people get to the finishing line. There's a lot of Range Rover restorations sitting in sheds all over the country right now that people have got halfway through and probably, sadly, may never finish, because they're just a lot of work. They really are. And that's why we do loads of them. I mean, a lot of people come to us to get their Range Rovers done and then sent on to the UK. But and it has to be said that a lot of the Range Rovers that we bought were from paddocks. And, you know, most people that we bought them from would have, well, they never had one, that's for sure.
Oh, really? That's funny. Yeah.
No, they never
had one.
And
who needs a stack of Range Rovers in the paddock that don't go?
Well, apparently everybody, because in our drives all over the country, including Tasmania, so all over the mainland Australia and all over Tasmania, my business partner in the UK, Shirley, she's been down here and we've gone on these drives all over the country picking up these Range Rovers, and I can honestly tell you that we've never come across anyone with one.
That's so weird.
Yeah, they've had two. Five seems to be the magic number.
Gosh.
And they have them all lined up. And the reason for that is because they fell to such an incredibly low value that $500 would buy a really good one. So instead of going and buying parts for one, they just bought another one.
That's funny. Hey, I lost my train of thought there for a second, but oh yeah, Tammy must have been listening to you talk about that Honda Accord, because she's texted in and she wants to know what a 1984 Honda Prelude would be worth.
Well, interesting that one, because they've been worth nothing for a very, very long time. And I'm talking, you know, basically under $1,000. But now a good Prelude, because they're such a great car, a good Prelude, at least $15,000 for a nice one now. $15,000 to $16,000 for a nice Prelude 84, and they're a great car. I love Preludes.
Got another one here. We've got a 1966 XP Falcon. Now this is stupid. I don't know how to say this. Is it a coupe or a coupe?
Oh, it's a coupe.
Coupe. Okay. How much for that?
They're a very rare car, and I'd need to know an awful lot more about that particular car to be able to value it. Because XP coupes are worth, you know, they're worth a lot of money. They really are. And it really depends on the engine options and the exact year of the car and a whole load of other things. They're a bit hard to value, though, because, they're a valuable thing.
So to the anonymous texter who wrote that message, if you want to send more details, feel free. 0438 922936. Glenn says, Kylie, the two-door Range Rovers, he says, were the cars that were used in the 70s TV show The Avengers. He said, classic cars and a classic show. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're one of the cars from that show, absolutely. And, there was a couple of reasons that they became so, so sought after. One was because they were in shows like that. The other one was that you may know that the Queen used to drive one in a very dark green, which was called Lincoln Green, which is the rarest colour of all for those vehicles.
The Queen drove one of these Range Rovers.
Yeah, she did. So, and that was another reason that everyone wanted one. And also my understanding, and I wasn't in the country at the time, but my understanding is that when they first came out in Australia, they were rather expensive too. And so they were a sought-after car because they were sort of considered to be highly valuable at the time of launch, so to speak. You know.
Yeah. And now you mentioned that your business partner is in the UK. How's she coping? I mean, is she in London because of all that, you know, the heat wave and the fires and the buckling of the train tracks? And sounds like it's dreadful.
It is, but she benefits enormously from having spent lots of time down here. And so she's absolutely breezing through the 42 degrees in London.
Oh, good.
That they've had over, yeah, the last 2 days. And she said, I did say to her, because I spoke to her just before I came on the show, and I did say to her, I said, you know, how are you coping at night? Oh, no problem. You know, you taught me to close all the blinds during the day and keep all the heat out and then open the windows at night. So that's what I'm doing, and it's working fine.
Hey, one thing I should remind everybody, if you know people that love segments like this and they want to listen to them live, all they've got to do is download the ABC Listen app onto their phone, and then no matter what country or state you're in, you can listen to the ABC in Hobart or, you know, right around the state on evenings in this particular case, because we are statewide. So, yeah, if anyone does want to share these sorts of stories and you have people that want to listen, just tell them to download the Listen app. Now, I've got another one just quickly. They're coming in thick and fast now, but we won't have time for many more. This one is a 1972 V8 Valiant Charger made in Adelaide, 87,000 Ks on the clock.
Okay, the Chargers, they're a pretty special thing. There's the ordinary Valiant Charger, and then there's the six-pack, and the six-packs now are getting well over $200,000. If this one's an ordinary Valiant Charger, I think it would currently be sitting on about 120K.
Right.
They're a very sought-after car for a charger. And again, you know, like with everything with these cars, it lines up with something, you know, from TV times and whatnot. And the Charger, of course, was the car in the Dukes of Hazzard, although there was a slight difference between the Valiant Charger and the Chrysler Charger that they used, but it was still a Charger. And it was a pretty sexy looking two-door coupe for its day, you know. Oh, they're a pretty nice car, a Charger.
And I suppose with only 87,000 Ks on the clock, that's pretty good. That would make quite a big difference to the value, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, to be fair, people have been on to the Chargers for quite a while now, so anyone who's got one realised that they had to keep the Ks low and not drive them too much, because they were going to become such a big collectible car, and they've gone on to become so. So most people who have got them, you know, they're pretty well all under 100,000 Ks for the good ones, you know.
Now, we've got the texter who messaged in about the 1966 XP Coupe. What was that one? I'll just go back to it. Details. Oh, the Falcon. The 1966 XP Falcon Coupe. It's 250 Super Pursuit. Does that mean anything to you? It means nothing to me.
That's the SP. Yeah, that's a little bit of a special one. Again, that car will be worth around about 120K now and rising fast, because it's super rare.
Just another quick one. Tony says, what's the value of an 81 Honda Prelude, please, 200,000 Ks? Is that deemed collectible?
Yeah, well, very much so. That was like the earlier texter that had the other 84 Prelude, because they're basically the same car. So around about $15,000-$16,000, but the Ks are a bit against it with 200,000 on the clock. Although, in saying that, I now see that a lot of the cars that are reaching the market here in Australia do have quite a lot of Ks on them, whereas, you know, most of our cars are sort of 50 to 60,000 Ks maximum. They just have to be, because they've got to be right in that collectible arena. But it's interesting to note that, you know, now across Australia, 200,000, 250,000 people will buy those cars. It's amazing. Whereas probably pre-COVID, they wouldn't. They wouldn't have touched them. It's changing. It's all changing quite quickly.
And, of course, we are broadcasting into Darwin and right around the Northern Territory this evening. Are there any particular cars? I mean, I guess Australia is Australia. The cars could be anywhere. But have you picked up any good cars in the Northern Territory or Darwin, or are there any that you're sort of, you know, on the hunt for? Is there anything valuable you know about there?
There is, and we've got quite a few collectors up that way, and it's mainly in the Japanese area. So things like the FJ40 Land Cruisers and the FJ45s, and a lot of early Datsuns and early Mazdas we're getting from up that way, and from collectors also in adjacent far north Queensland too, that have got those cars too, because the Japanese movement is a big movement at the moment, that, you know, people are paying some big money for Japanese cars.
And what's the best car you've got out of the Northern Territory? You know, if you had to name your number one car that was an absolute score.
A Range Rover that we bought for $800.
Yeah, right, another Range Rover.
Another one. I can remember it. Well, we still got it because we sent it to the UK, sold it, did a restoration on it, sold it, and then bought it back, and we brought it back to Australia. So it only came back about a month ago.
And sold to someone for a fortune.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it was an $800 Range Rover, and we've got it in the factory now. And that was a really good purchase because, although at the time we thought, should we pay that much for it? Because it was quite a lot a couple of years ago. Now it's like a dream. It's like, where would you find a running, operational, registered Range Rover for $800? It's impossible to find now. But that just shows you how this market changes. It's moved up.
Sure does. Great to talk to you, Mark. I'm really looking forward to doing this every Thursday at 8 o'clock. So talk to you again next week.
Absolutely look forward to it, Kylie. It'll be great.